A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the evidence for ox bile versus digestive enzymes after gallbladder removal, and whether there's a case for using both. The real-world angle is what makes it interesting. You're heading to a barbecue. You don't want to refrigerate anything or think about it constantly. So which is the least intrusive to carry? And what's the actual dosing protocol? There's a lot to unpack here.
The barbecue scenario is exactly where this matters most. You've got a high-fat meal, you're out of the house, and you don't want to spend the next 3 hours feeling like you swallowed a balloon. Let's start with what's actually happening physiologically, because that dictates which intervention makes sense.
Before we get into the evidence, frame the distinction for me. Ox bile versus digestive enzymes. What are we actually talking about here?
Ox bile is exactly what it sounds like, processed bovine bile, typically dried and encapsulated. The idea is straightforward. You no longer have a gallbladder to store and concentrate your own bile, so you're supplementing with an external source. Digestive enzymes are a broader category, usually a blend of lipase, protease, and amylase, sometimes with pancreatin as the base. The lipase is the key player here because fat digestion is the problem. Without sufficient bile, your own pancreatic lipase can't access the fat efficiently. Bile emulsifies fat into smaller droplets, and lipase works on those smaller droplets. They're partners.
They're not actually alternatives. They do different things.
That's the core insight, and it's what most people miss. Bile is a detergent. It breaks large fat globules into tiny micelles. Lipase is the scissors that cut the fat molecules apart. If you don't have the detergent, the scissors can't reach their target. If you have the detergent but not enough scissors, you still leave partially digested fat in the gut.
Which is what causes the bloating and urgency Daniel mentioned.
Undigested fat in the colon gets fermented by bacteria producing gas, and it also pulls water into the bowel. That's the urgency. The clinical term is steatorrhea when it's severe, but even subclinical fat malabsorption produces symptoms. Studies suggest somewhere between 5 and 12% of post-cholecystectomy patients develop significant bile acid malabsorption, and a much larger percentage, some estimates run to 40%, have some degree of fat digestion impairment.
5 to 12% for frank malabsorption, up to 40% with some impairment. That's a wide range.
It is, and part of the problem is that post-cholecystectomy syndrome is a grab bag of diagnoses. Some patients have bile acid diarrhea, which is a completely different mechanism that's bile acid spilling into the colon and irritating the lining. Ox bile would make that worse. But for the subset whose primary issue is poor fat digestion due to the missing bile pool, that's where supplementation has a rationale.
Step one is knowing which bucket you're in.
And this is why self-experimentation without diagnosis can backfire. If you have bile acid diarrhea, taking ox bile is like pouring gasoline on a fire. You need a bile acid sequestrate, cholestyramine or cholecystevolum, not more bile. But if your issue is insufficient bile for emulsification, the sequestrants would make you worse by binding what little bile you have. They're opposite treatments.
The evidence question has a prerequisite. Who are we treating? Let's assume we're talking about the person who genuinely has insufficient bile for fat digestion. What does the evidence say about ox bile?
This is where the literature gets thin. There are no large randomized controlled trials of ox bile supplementation for post-cholecystectomy patients. I want to be upfront about that. What we have are mechanistic plausibility, some small studies on bile acid supplementation in other contexts, and a lot of clinical experience.
Mechanistic plausibility and clinical experience. The two things that make evidence-based medicine twitchy.
They should make anyone twitchy. But here's the thing. The mechanism is unusually clear. We know the gallbladder stores and concentrates bile. We know it releases bile in response to a fatty meal via cholecystokinin signaling. We know that without a gallbladder, bile trickles continuously from the liver into the small intestine, never concentrated, never bolused. We know concentrated bile is more effective at emulsification. So the logic of supplementing with exogenous bile acids at mealtime is unusually direct.
It's not. This herb modulates the immune system in ways we don't fully understand. It's replacement therapy.
It's conceptually similar to taking lactase if you're lactose intolerant. You're supplying the missing agent. The question is whether oral ox bile actually reaches the small intestine in a form that works. And here we have some data, not from cholecystectomy studies specifically, but from studies on bile acid supplementation for fat-soluble vitamin absorption in cystic fibrosis and short bowel syndrome. The bile acids do survive stomach acid, especially in enteric-coated formulations, and they do participate in micelle formation.
What about the timing question? Daniel mentioned we'd discussed timing before. When do you take it relative to the meal?
This is one of those things where the clinical wisdom is actually more specific than the published evidence. Most experienced clinicians recommend taking it about 15 to 20 minutes before the meal, or at the very start of eating. The logic is that you want the bile present in the small intestine when the fat arrives. If you take it after the meal, the fat has already passed through the duodenum without adequate emulsification, and you're chasing the problem.
Pre-meal dosing, not post-meal. That's actually counterintuitive. Most people would reach for the supplement after they start feeling symptoms.
Which is a common mistake. By the time you're bloated, the undigested fat is already in your colon. Taking ox bile at that point does nothing for the meal you just ate. It's preventative, not reactive.
Let's pivot to digestive enzymes. What's the evidence picture there?
Slightly better, but still not robust for this specific use case. Pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy, PERT, is well established for pancreatic insufficiency, where the pancreas isn't producing enough lipase, protease, and amylase. That's a different condition. Post-cholecystectomy, the pancreas is usually fine. It's making enzymes, they just can't access the fat. So the question is whether adding more lipase helps when the real problem is emulsification.
If the fat isn't emulsified, does more lipase actually help?
This is where the biochemistry gets interesting. Lipase works at the oil-water interface. It can't penetrate into a large fat droplet. It only acts on the surface. Emulsification increases the surface area by orders of magnitude. So if you have poor emulsification, adding more lipase is like adding more workers to a construction site where nobody can reach the building. They're present, they're capable, but they're not productive.
That's a great image. More workers staring at an inaccessible building.
However, and this is the caveat, some fat does get partially emulsified even without a gallbladder, just less efficiently. And some commercial digestive enzyme products include not just lipase, but also ox bile. So the products themselves sometimes blur the distinction.
The versus framing in the prompt might be the wrong framing. It's not really one versus the other.
For the specific mechanism we're discussing, ox bile addresses the root problem more directly. Digestive enzymes address a downstream consequence. If you had to pick one, and you're confident the issue is insufficient bile, the mechanistic case favors ox bile. But the clinical evidence for both is mostly anecdotal and based on physician experience rather than large trials.
Is there any reason you might want to use both?
Yes, and this is where the barbecue scenario becomes relevant. A high-fat meal. Ribs, burgers with cheese, potato salad with mayonnaise. This is a large fat load arriving in a short time window. Even with ox bile supplementation, you're not perfectly replicating the concentrated bile bolus a gallbladder would deliver. Adding lipase provides additional enzymatic capacity. Some gastroenterologists recommend exactly this combination for high-fat meals, ox bile for emulsification, enzymes for hydrolysis.
The combo makes mechanistic sense for big fatty meals specifically.
For everyday eating, ox bile alone might be sufficient. For a barbecue, the combination gives you more coverage. But, and this is important, there's no trial comparing ox bile monotherapy to combination therapy in post-cholecystectomy patients. This is extrapolation from physiology.
That's a refreshingly honest answer. Let's get to the practical question. You're going to a barbecue. You're carrying these with you. What's actually least intrusive?
Neither requires refrigeration, which simplifies things enormously. Ox bile supplements are typically dried and stable at room temperature. Most digestive enzyme products are the same. They're lyophilized powders in capsules. You can toss them in a pocket or a bag. The main practical difference is dosing frequency and timing.
Walk me through a real scenario. You arrive at the barbecue. You're going to eat over the course of an hour or two. What do you actually do?
Here's what I'd recommend, and this is based on how the physiology works rather than a published protocol. You take your first dose about 15 minutes before you start eating. If it's ox bile, typical doses range from 100 to 500 milligrams per dose, depending on the product and the fat content of the meal. For a barbecue, I'd lean toward the higher end, maybe 250 to 500 milligrams.
If you're using digestive enzymes instead.
Enzyme products vary enormously in lipase units. A typical over-the-counter product might contain 5,000 to 20,000 lipase units per capsule. For reference, a healthy pancreas releases about 30,000 to 50,000 lipase units during a meal. So for a high-fat meal, you might need 2 to 3 capsules of a standard product.
That's a lot of capsules to be popping at a barbecue.
It can be, which is why ox bile has a practical advantage. You need fewer capsules for equivalent fat coverage because you're addressing the emulsification step rather than trying to compensate with excess enzyme. 1 or 2 capsules of ox bile versus 3 to 5 of enzymes.
Ox bile wins on capsule count. What about the second round of eating? The barbecue isn't one discrete meal. People graze for hours.
This is the real-world complexity that dosing protocols rarely address. If you're eating continuously over 2 hours, a single pre-meal dose of ox bile will cover the first hour or so. But bile acids undergo enterohepatic circulation. They're absorbed in the ileum and returned to the liver, but that takes time. For extended eating, I'd suggest a second dose about 60 to 90 minutes after the first, especially if you're still eating fatty foods.
2 doses over the course of an afternoon barbecue. That's manageable.
And here's a practical tip. You don't need to be furtive about it, but you also don't need to make it a production. Capsules in a small tin or a keychain pill container. Nobody notices or cares. The intrusiveness is mostly psychological.
The intrusiveness is in your head, not in anyone else's experience. But there's also the remembering to dose problem. If you're socializing, you forget.
This is where a pre-committed routine helps. I tell patients, former patients I should say, I'm retired. I used to tell patients to link the dose to a specific trigger. Not before I eat, which is vague, but when I sit down at the table or when I pick up my first drink. Something concrete that you do every time.
When I pick up my first drink, trigger is clever. You're definitely having a drink at a barbecue.
And if you're carrying the capsules in the same pocket as your phone, you'll feel them when you sit down. Physical reminders work better than mental ones.
Let's talk about the water meals point. The prompt mentions the advice to just eat smaller, lower-fat meals, and the counterpoint that sometimes you're hungry and want to eat a real meal.
The eat small, frequent, low-fat meals. Advice is technically correct for managing symptoms, and it's also completely unrealistic for normal human life. People go to barbecues, people eat pizza, people want to feel normal. Telling someone they can never eat a large, fatty meal again is a compliance disaster. It's the dietary equivalent of abstinence, only education.
It works perfectly in a world where nobody ever goes to a barbecue.
The better approach is to accept that people will eat high-fat meals sometimes and give them tools to manage those occasions. That's where supplementation comes in. It's not a daily crutch, it's a situational tool. Use it when you need it.
That's a much more humane framing than never eat ribs again.
It's more effective. Patients who are told never eat X often end up eating X anyway, but without any mitigation strategy, and then they suffer. If you tell them when you eat X, take Y beforehand, you've given them agency.
What about the products themselves? The prompt asks about real-world carry. Are we talking about anything that needs special handling?
Almost all of these are shelf-stable capsules. No refrigeration needed. Heat is the main concern. Don't leave them in a hot car for 8 hours because the proteins and enzyme products can denature and the bile acids can degrade. But in a pocket or a bag for an afternoon, they're fine.
You're not carrying a cooler to the barbecue just for your supplements.
No, and that's an important practical point. If the intervention required refrigeration, compliance would plummet. The fact that these are room temperature stable makes them usable in exactly the scenarios where they're most needed. Eating out, social events, travel.
Let's circle back to the evidence question, because I want to make sure we're being clear about what we know and what we don't know. Summarize the evidence landscape for me.
Here's the honest summary. For ox bile, zero large randomized controlled trials in post-cholecystectomy patients. The evidence base is mechanistic plausibility, which is unusually strong because we understand the physiology well, plus decades of clinical experience, plus small studies in adjacent conditions. For digestive enzymes, well established for pancreatic insufficiency, but not specifically studied for post-cholecystectomy fat malabsorption. The combination, no direct trial evidence, but a coherent mechanistic case for high-fat meals.
That's a remarkably thin evidence base for something that affects millions of people.
It's a neglected area. Gallbladder removal is one of the most common surgeries worldwide, about 600,000 annually in the United States alone, and the follow-up care for digestive symptoms is surprisingly under-researched. Part of the problem is that post-cholecystectomy syndrome is heterogeneous. It's not one condition. It's a cluster of different problems with different mechanisms. That makes it hard to study.
600,000 a year in the U.S. That's a lot of people being told, you'll be fine, and then finding out they're not.
The you'll be fine messaging is part of the problem. Surgeons remove the gallbladder, the acute problem is solved, and the chronic digestive issues are treated as minor or psychosomatic. Patients get told to eat smaller meals and sent on their way. The fact that we don't have good trials on something as basic as ox bile supplementation is a reflection of how little attention this gets.
If someone's listening and thinking, I should try one of these, what's the practical decision framework?
Step 1. Know what you're treating. If your primary symptom is urgent watery diarrhea shortly after eating, we're talking within 30 minutes to an hour, that might be bile acid diarrhea, and ox bile is the wrong direction. You'd want to talk to your doctor about a bile acid sequestrant. If your primary symptom is bloating, gas, and looser stools that are greasy or float, that's more suggestive of fat malabsorption, and ox bile is more likely to help.
The greasy or float test is something people can actually observe.
It's crude but useful. Steatorrhea stools are pale, bulky, foul-smelling, and they float or leave an oily film. Even subclinical fat malabsorption often produces stools that are softer and float more than they used to. Start with ox bile alone before meals at a moderate dose, say 125 to 250 milligrams for a typical meal. See how you respond. If you get significant improvement but not complete relief, especially with high-fat meals, consider adding enzymes. If ox bile makes things worse, more diarrhea, more urgency, stop immediately and reconsider the diagnosis.
The combo approach for the barbecue scenario.
For a planned high-fat meal, I'd take ox bile, maybe 300 to 500 milligrams, 15 minutes before eating, plus one or two enzyme capsules at the same time. If the eating extends beyond 90 minutes, a second ox bile dose. That's a reasonable protocol based on physiology, even if it hasn't been validated in a trial.
What about the products that already combine ox bile with enzymes? There are several on the market.
They're convenient, and convenience matters for compliance. The downside is that you can't adjust the components independently. If you need more bile but not more lipase or vice versa, you're stuck with the fixed ratio. But for a barbecue scenario where you want simplicity, a combination product is perfectly reasonable.
One capsule versus three. That's a real difference when you're standing around in someone's backyard.
And the combination products usually have lower doses of each component, so you might still need two capsules, but that's still better than managing two separate bottles.
Is there any downside to taking these long term? Any safety concerns?
Ox bile is generally well tolerated at recommended doses. The main side effects are gastrointestinal, diarrhea, cramping, nausea, and they're usually dose dependent. There's a theoretical concern about bile acid supplementation and colon cancer risk, because secondary bile acids are known tumor promoters in the colon, but that's based on endogenous bile acid exposure over decades, not intermittent supplementation. I wouldn't lose sleep over it. Even better safety profile. Pancreatic enzymes have been used for decades in cystic fibrosis patients at much higher doses than anything in an over-the-counter product. The main risk is fibrosing colonopathy at extremely high doses, but those doses are orders of magnitude above what we're discussing. For occasional use with meals, the safety profile is excellent.
The risk of harm is low, even if the evidence for benefit is thinner than we'd like.
That's the calculus. Low risk, plausible benefit, and the alternative is suffering through bloating and urgency at social events. For many people, that's an easy decision.
Let me ask a question that might seem obvious. Why ox bile specifically? Why not another animal's bile?
Bovine bile is used because cattle are slaughtered at scale and the bile is a byproduct. Porcine bile would work similarly. The bile acid composition differs between species. Human bile is predominantly cholic acid and kinodeoxycholic acid, while bovine bile has more deoxycholic acid. But for emulsification purposes, the differences are minor. It's a detergent. The exact molecular structure matters less than the amphipathic property.
That's having both water-soluble and fat-soluble regions, right?
One end of the molecule faces the water phase, the other faces the fat phase. That's what allows bile acids to stabilize the interface between fat droplets and the aqueous intestinal contents. It's the same principle as dish soap.
You're essentially taking a biological detergent before meals.
That's a reductive but not inaccurate description. Biological detergent from cows. The marketing writes itself.
I'm sure that'll be on the bottle any day now. Let's talk about the enzyme side more specifically. You mentioned lipase, protease, amylase. Is lipase the only one that matters here?
For post-cholecystectomy fat malabsorption, lipase is the star player, but there's an argument for the full spectrum. If fat digestion is impaired, undigested fat can coat other nutrients and impair their digestion too. So having protease and amylase present helps ensure that proteins and carbohydrates are broken down efficiently even in the presence of excess fat. It's not strictly necessary, but it's not wasted either.
The multi-enzyme products are just marketing. There's a rationale.
A rationale, yes. Whether it makes a clinically meaningful difference for most people is another question. If you're optimizing for minimal capsule count, a lipase-only product would be the leanest option. But most over-the-counter enzyme products are blends, and the blends are fine.
What about the prescription-grade enzymes? Creon, Zenpep, those sorts of things?
Those are porcine-derived pancreatic enzyme products, and they're vastly more potent than over-the-counter supplements. We're talking tens of thousands of lipase units per capsule versus thousands. They're also vastly more expensive and require a prescription. For post-cholecystectomy use without documented pancreatic insufficiency, they're overkill and unlikely to be covered by insurance. Over-the-counter is the practical route.
The prescription stuff is a different league entirely, not relevant for the barbecue scenario.
And honestly, for the occasional high-fat meal, you don't want pharmaceutical-grade enzyme replacement. You want something simple, portable, and affordable.
Let's go back to the prom's question about least intrusive. We've established that both are portable and shelf-stable. But what about the social dimension? Is it weird to be taking pills before you eat at someone's barbecue?
I think this is one of those things that feels more conspicuous than it is. Lots of people take medications or supplements with meals. It's so common that nobody registers it. If anyone asks, and they probably won't. Digestive supplement is a complete answer. Or something to help me enjoy this food more. People relate to that.
Something to help me enjoy this food more is actually a great line. It's honest without being clinical.
It reframes it from a medical intervention to a quality of life choice, which is exactly what it is. You're not treating a disease. You're making a meal more enjoyable.
What about the people who sell these products? Is there anyone making specific post-cholecystectomy formulations?
There are a few companies that market directly to this population, but I'm hesitant to name brands. It starts to feel like an endorsement. What I'll say is that the market has recognized this need. You can find ox bile supplements, digestive enzyme supplements, and combination products specifically labeled for gallbladder support. The quality varies. Look for products that disclose their lipase units if they contain enzymes, and their bile acid content if they contain ox bile. Transparency in labeling is a proxy for quality.
That's a useful heuristic. If the label is vague about what's actually in it, move on.
Proprietary blend without specific amounts is a red flag for any supplement, but especially for these.
Let me pull on a thread you mentioned earlier. You said that if ox bile makes symptoms worse, stop immediately and reconsider the diagnosis. How common is it for people to misidentify their problem and take the wrong thing?
Common enough to be worth emphasizing. Bile acid diarrhea and fat malabsorption can look similar. Both cause loose stools after eating. But the mechanisms are opposite. In bile acid diarrhea, the problem is too much bile acid reaching the colon. In fat malabsorption, the problem is not enough bile reaching the small intestine. Taking ox bile when you have bile acid diarrhea is like adding fuel to a fire. The symptoms get dramatically worse, usually within the first few doses.
The self-experiment is diagnostic in itself. If you get worse, you've learned something.
A negative response to ox bile is clinically informative. It suggests your problem might be bile acid diarrhea rather than bile insufficiency. That's worth discussing with a gastroenterologist, because the treatment is completely different. Bile acid sequestrants rather than bile acid supplements.
The body has a cruel sense of humor. Two opposite problems with similar symptoms, and the wrong treatment makes things worse.
The body is not optimized for diagnostic clarity. It's optimized for not dying, and it's willing to be confusing in the service of that goal.
Let's bring this back to the barbecue. Someone's listening. They've had their gallbladder out. They're tired of feeling terrible after social meals. What's the one-sentence summary?
For a high-fat meal out of the house, ox bile taken 15 minutes before eating is the simplest, most mechanistically direct intervention. With a second dose if you're eating for more than 90 minutes, add digestive enzymes if you want extra coverage. But the bile is doing the heavy lifting.
The evidence caveat.
The evidence is thin, but the physiology is clear. You're making a low-risk bet on a well-understood mechanism. If it works, you've solved a real quality of life problem. If it doesn't, you've spent $20 and learned something.
That's a remarkably pragmatic take from someone who reads papers for fun.
Medicine is applied biology, and sometimes the biology is clear enough that you can act on it while waiting for the trials to catch up. This is one of those cases. The trials may never come. There's no patentable molecule here, no profit incentive for a large RCT. Ox bile is a century-old remedy. Nobody's going to spend millions proving it works.
The orphan intervention. Effective, plausible, unprofitable to study.
And that's a whole category of medical knowledge that exists in clinical practice, but not in the literature. Post-cholecystectomy management is full of these. Surgeons do the procedure, and the long tail of digestive management falls to primary care and gastroenterology, and nobody's funding the research.
We're in the realm of clinical wisdom rather than evidence-based guidelines.
And clinical wisdom deserves a seat at the table. It's not the same as a randomized controlled trial, but it's not nothing either. When hundreds of clinicians independently converge on the same recommendation based on patient feedback, that's a signal. It's a weaker signal than a trial, but it's a signal.
Let me ask about the dosing protocol more granularly. You said 125 to 500 milligrams of ox bile. That's a fourfold range. How does someone dial that in?
Start low and titrate up. Take 125 milligrams before a moderately fatty meal, say a sandwich with cheese and mayo. If that helps, you found your dose for moderate meals. For a high-fat meal like a barbecue, try 250. If you're still symptomatic, go to 500 next time. The endpoint is symptom relief, not a lab value. You're looking for the lowest dose that prevents bloating and urgency.
If you overshoot the dose,
you might get some loose stools or mild cramping. It's self-limiting. Reduce the dose next time. The therapeutic window is wide enough that you're unlikely to do yourself any serious harm by taking a bit too much.
The same titration logic for enzymes.
Start with one capsule of a standard product, typically 5,000 to 10,000 lipase units, and increase if needed. For most people and most meals, one or two capsules is sufficient. The barbecue scenario might push you to two or three.
The timing is the same? 15 minutes before?
Yes, for both ox bile and enzymes, the pre-meal window is similar. You want them present in the small intestine when the food arrives. Taking them simultaneously is fine. There's no interaction concern.
What about alcohol? It's a barbecue. There's beer.
Alcohol doesn't directly interact with either ox bile or digestive enzymes. The indirect effect is that alcohol can speed up gastric emptying, which means food reaches the small intestine faster. That might slightly compress your pre-dose window, but in practice, it doesn't matter much. Take your capsules, have your beer, enjoy your ribs. The order of operations isn't that delicate.
Take your capsules, have your beer, enjoy your ribs. The official My Weird Prompts Barbecue Protocol.
I should put that on a t-shirt.
I'd buy it. One more practical question. What about if you forget? You're halfway through your plate of ribs and realize you didn't take anything.
Take it as soon as you remember. It's less effective than pre-meal dosing, because some fat has already passed through the duodenum without adequate bile, but it'll help with the fat that's still arriving. Better late than never. The all-or-nothing thinking. I forgot, so I might as well skip it, is a mistake.
Partial coverage is better than no coverage.
And if you forgot once, you'll probably remember next time, because the consequences of forgetting are motivating.
Nothing like a 3-hour bloat to improve future compliance.
The most effective teaching tool in medicine is unpleasant symptoms.
Let's zoom out for a second. We've been talking about ox bile and enzymes as separate categories, but you mentioned that some products combine them. What's the argument against just taking a combination product for every fatty meal and not overthinking it?
The argument against is that you might be taking something you don't need. If ox bile alone resolves your symptoms, adding enzymes is unnecessary expense and extra capsules. The argument for is simplicity. One product, one decision, less mental overhead. I think either approach is reasonable. The don't overthink it approach has a lot to recommend it for quality of life.
Especially at a barbecue, where the whole point is not overthinking things.
The goal is to eat with friends and not be distracted by digestive anxiety. Whatever gets you there with the least cognitive load is the right answer for that scenario.
That's a real thing that doesn't get talked about enough. The anticipatory worry about how you're going to feel after eating.
It's huge, and it changes behavior. People decline social invitations, they eat less than they want to, they plan their days around bathroom access. If a few capsules before a meal can reduce that anxiety, the benefit goes beyond digestion. It's a social and psychological benefit.
That might be the strongest argument for carrying these supplements, even if the evidence base is thinner than we'd like. The cost of not trying is higher than the cost of trying.
That's exactly the calculus. $20 in a low-risk experiment versus ongoing anxiety and symptom management. The expected value strongly favors trying.
All right, I think we've covered the evidence, the mechanism, the practicalities. Anything we missed?
One thing worth mentioning. These supplements are not a license to eat a stick of butter. They help, but they don't fully replicate the function of a gallbladder. A gallbladder can concentrate bile tenfold and deliver a precisely timed bolus. Oral supplements are a crude approximation. You'll get better results if you're still somewhat reasonable about fat quantity, even with supplementation.
It's a tool, not a magic wand.
A tool, not a magic wand. You'll probably feel better than without it. You probably won't feel exactly like you did before your gallbladder came out. That's the honest framing.
That's fair. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, physicists at a research station in Greenland seriously pursued muon-catalyzed fusion as a viable path to unlimited energy, believing muons could replace electrons in hydrogen molecules and lower the temperature required for fusion by orders of magnitude. The theory was elegant and attracted major funding before it became clear that muons decay too quickly and each muon could catalyze only a limited number of fusion reactions before winking out of existence, making the process energetically pointless.
That's a phrase.
They built a fusion research program on a particle with the lifespan of a mayfly.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It actually helps. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
See you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.